Good afternoon and welcome to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. I'm joined today by two of the creative minds behind the Alaska Botanical Garden. This garden, located off Tudor Road and Campbell Airstrip Road near Far North Bicentennial Park, turns 25 years old this July. So how did the idea of a botanical garden up in the wilds of Alaska get started? And what is the special function of a botanical garden anyway? How does it differ from any other public garden? Here to share the history and growth of the Alaska Botanical Garden and lots of their know-how are my two guests, Mike Monteruso, Executive Director. Welcome, Mike.
Thank you, Kathleen.
So happy to have you.
Yep,
thank you.
Great to be here.
And Jeff Lohenfels, who he and I go back way back to the...
Too far back, maybe.
We don't even want to admit how far back we go. We were children then, right? And he's he was the Anchorage Daily News gardener, still is. And I once worked there, and your column came through me, and if you were mad, you yelled at me.
You were a great editor. Terrific.
Because I didn't mess with your column.
No, you were terrific.
You're kind. So anyway, he's a lifelong gardener and a lifelong columnist, and I think I read the longest-serving North American garden columnist by someone's estimation.
Wow.
So lots of knowledge there. So, but we also welcome calls from our listeners. Your questions, your comments are always welcome at Hometown Alaska. And since we're in the thick of the gardening season, today's a good day to call with your questions. When can you transplant that perennial? What new plants can Alaskans grow now that our summers are getting warmer? And what unfriendly bugs has this warmer weather brought us? Just a couple questions you might be thinking about, but we don't have to answer those. We can answer yours. So give us a call. Here in Anchorage, it's 550-8433. Statewide, it's 1-888-353-5752. And we do welcome your email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. All right, let's get started. Mike, I'm going to jump in with you.
Sure.
Because really the genesis of this show, even though it's gardening season, was because there was a birthday party at the Botanical Garden.
Right.
And so I just kind of want people to know about this local asset. It's a nonprofit public garden. Mm-hmm. You become a member, and membership gets you entry, but you don't have to be a member to join. And first of all, let's talk about how big it is and just some of that, the facets of it. And Jeff, jump in any old time. But go ahead.
Yeah, Jeff was around.
Jeff was
long,
around in the. We're going to get to the. Yeah, because you've only been here about 4 years.
Well, 6 years at the garden and 6 months as the director.
Okay. You were willing to take on that mantle of responsibility.
Well, it's a beautiful place. And so, yeah, regarding the structure, the size of it, as you mentioned, we are on the east side of town, out by. Far North Bicentennial. We have about 120 acres in the boreal forest, most of which is still boreal forest, and we work with the forest and in the forest, and it's beautiful, but it does present some challenges. And so we have a number of different themed gardens, perennial gardens, vegetable gardens, herb gardens, and rock gardens, and so we have a lot to see out there, and it changes every week.
I'm going to interrupt you quickly because we've got a caller, and I always
go ahead.
To get these callers on and find out what they want to know.
Yep.
This is Stu. Hi, Stu.
Hey.
Welcome.
Thanks for taking my call. I was wondering, I have some acreage of dead white spruce up in Willow, and someone suggested, since it's a hilly lot, that maybe sugar maples might have a chance if it warms up much more. Is that even something that someone could consider? To get the maple syrup.
Well, we have birch.
You could do birch.
Yeah. Right. Well, go ahead.
Well,
Jeff is going to jump in.
I'm of the opinion that we can grow maple trees here if we have the right mycorrhizal fungi in the root system.
And getting down and dirty now.
Right now I'm getting down and dirty. The reason we don't grow them here is because they don't have the right fungi, which associates with their root system and helps feed them. They exist in Norway. It's certainly cold there. They exist in, you know, all the places we know that have much colder temperature. The question is, would you really want to do it? We were just talking about this before the show began. We live in a state that is a pristine or more pristine than any other state left. We're the last one. And we bring in plants all the time that displace other plants that were native to our area and displace the wildlife to, I think, our detriment. So we have to really think twice about bringing in new plants, particularly a large planting. And one of the reasons why I love the Botanical Garden is because that's where I believe, and it's just my own opinion, that's where I believe our exotic plants that we love to grow in our yards really belong. Not in our yards where they escape and become weeds and pests and go into someone else's yard, but if we have a nice spot where they can be controlled and worked on and studied and loved.
So maple trees would not really be that local thing, but is there something local you would suggest us do that—
Birch trees.
Yeah.
Birch trees would be fine.
Sure, we grow birch trees.
And we'd make birch syrup.
Exactly. Birch syrup. Yeah, exactly. We did that this spring.
Yeah.
Did you?
Yeah.
What do you think, Stu? Does that just seem too old hat to you? Not exciting enough?
Well, I'm one of those people that has a Costco membership just because I like to buy maple syrup.
There you go.
You can get a bigger vat there from Canada or Vermont for, you know, half what you'd pay at Freddy's. But since you did bring it up, we got the terrible Laurel bird cherry problem. I was just over at Valley of the Moon Park using that new dog park, and I went to the creek to water the dogs, and it's just the only plant growing by the creek now is those bird cherries. So I don't know. You guys might want to talk about that.
Oh, we will.
But it's really very, very related. So I had a friend who asked me last year, what did I think about him putting a mountain ash out in McCarthy? What do you think I said? I remember when the Valley of the Moon was beautiful. You could walk there. You could probably fish there, although they didn't let us fish at the time. And now you can't. And if you bring in those sugar maples, the same exact thing could happen. I'm not saying that it would, but it could happen. I think we got to make sure that that doesn't happen in Alaska.
All right. Thanks for the point.
Thanks, Stu. Appreciate the question. It's a good one. So, okay, Mike, I'm jumping back to you to let you continue to talk about the various gardens that you, the featured gardens you have at the Botanical Garden.
Right. Well, we have a rock garden, which alpine rock garden. So we like to collect or display plants that represent the surroundings. And we do that to a certain extent, I would say around 20%. 25% of our collections actually are native plants, and the rest would be plants that do survive here year-round but are just not native to our area. That's something that I would like to see us increase as far as our native plantings or representations of native plantings. That said, we have an herb garden. We have two perennial gardens. We have a vegetable garden. And so it's really a good diversity of plants.
The herb garden's been written up in Sunset Magazine, I think,
twice. I was going to ask you, who has paid attention to the Alaska
twice to the herb garden, and I think the, I know the rock garden, the International Rock Garden Society came and had an annual meeting here. It is, without question, one of the top five of the best rock gardens in the world. And they compare it to the one at Kew Gardens, which is, you know, maintained by the Prince of Wales.
Uh-huh.
It is spectacular. And you go out there and the things you see in that little teeny area, it's unbelievable. And people have no idea that this is one of the top rock gardens in the world.
And we couldn't do it without the volunteers, the people that started the garden, not only 25 years ago, but the people that maintain it even today. We have a strong relationship with the Rock Garden Society for that particular garden, and the Herb Study Group, which historically came from Extension, had a partnership with Extension Service for the Herb Garden. And so it's taken a lot of people, a lot of hard work over the years, and we're just thankful to still have those connections.
You know, I just took a hike with the Alaska Native Plant Society up to Arctic Valley. And I associate rock gardens with alpine.
Yep.
But how do you have one at that low elevation? And it's an ignorant question, I admit. But you just have put a lot of rocks in there.
So we have the same kind of material in most of our rock garden beds. We do have a tufa bed, which came from Canada, I believe. A lot of the rocks did. But it's to some extent not an experiment, but we're learning all the time.
Yeah, it's an artificial scree garden.
Okay.
So it's got pebbles. And we made one at our house using the pebbles that we picked up off the driveway after the spring, you know, when you had snow. And the job, Verna Pratt, of course, was heavily involved, and the volunteer work that goes in, it is beautiful. I mean, there's always something in flower.
It's the springtime. Well, of course, it's probably a spring garden, right? I mean,
it's all seasons three full seasons of color, and it just changes from week to week. So it's really, I don't have a favorite time of year, but there's something different every week.
Mm-hmm. And there really isn't a thing there that you couldn't grow in your own. You could make a hypertuber. You could go to the garden when they have a class because
they're having a hypertuba class come up. What is hypertuba? I'm sorry. It's lightweight, right?
It's a planter made of lightweight concrete and peat and perlite mixture that so you can handle it. And you put soil in it and plant things, yes, and it's full of hardy plants. Yeah.
Play-Doh for adults.
Okay. So you use that to make a rock garden?
Or it could be part of your rock garden or it could be your rock garden.
So it would elevate a part of your garden.
Yeah, you could have it right on your deck if you wanted. It's just a little miniature garden.
Yeah.
But they've got, 10 or 15 different beds in that rock garden and then a bunch of hypertuber beds.
Yep.
It's just all blended in beautifully. It's just spectacular.
It probably blooms before, say, Arctic Valley blooms, right? Because it's maybe lower elevation and warmer.
It depends on sun exposure. We're in the forest, and so sometimes it's a little colder, actually, on the east side of town in particular, too. We're in a bit of a low spot in Anchorage. Mm-hmm. And so it can lag behind
Okay, that's true. Yeah. That part of Anchorage is probably a little cooler.
Mm-hmm.
Where you are, yeah. So let me think. Why do you have two perennial gardens? Are you focusing one on one and one on another kind of thing?
All of our gardens are, in a sense, perennial gardens, because that's really the backbone of our collection, is perennial plants, particularly herbaceous plants, although I would like to expand our woody plant collection as well.
Mm-hmm.
But we have perennials in almost all of our gardens as a part of the theme. And so we have a lower perennial garden and the upper perennial garden, which was there 20, 25 years ago. Now we've turned that into a vegetable garden, which has perennials.
So things morph.
And things change.
Yeah. Let me throw out our phone numbers one more time and also let people know, if you just tuned in, we're sort of having a birthday party here for the Alaska Botanical Garden. It turns 25 this month. And I just thought, gosh, this is an asset in our community. I visited it before, but I really don't know the history. I know just like the Chugach State Park. I mean, people a long time ago got interested in having an asset here and made it happen. So we have Mike Monteruso, who's the executive director. And we have Jeff Lohenfels, who was there at the beginning. He was one of those people, I guess, who was like, hey, let's have a botanical garden. So that's who's talking today. We're talking about the garden. We're also available to answer questions about what's happening in Anchorage, what's happening with warmer climate, are different bugs coming up. So give us a call at 550-8433 in Anchorage or 1-888-353-5752 statewide. And again, I welcome your email at hometown@alaskapublic.org.
So you mentioned the vegetable garden. That's really the
Heritage Garden, the Anchorage Heritage Garden, sure.
And it's the newest garden, and it was put in to show people what folks grew here in 1915 when they first came up here. And it's phenomenal again.
So what's in there?
A truck.
Oh, that's right. The truck with the cabbages. I've seen that.
The truck is very popular. So that's a lot of fun.
Yeah. Very picturesque
texture. As Jeff mentioned, things that were grown in the early 1900s, say like turn of 1900 up to about 1930, 1940 or thereabouts. So the kind of things that they're still grown today for the most part as far as the cool season crops.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to some perennials. And that's how they did it back then, is that they had perennials and peonies all mixed in with vegetables, and it was kind of just one beautiful display.
That's the way I do it.
Yeah, sure.
Because the peonies come back, thank goodness,
yeah,
they come back.
Yeah.
So then I plant around them and hope, you know. So is that the same as, I didn't know about this before I checked out your website. Is it called Lily's Garden or?
Lyle's Garden, right.
Because I read her history and there was reference to her coming up here, maybe from New York, I think, and really getting into gardening. And so is that part of the Heritage Garden or is that a
separate garden. And so that is probably our most formal perennial style garden. We have some hard features in there, some pavers, different kind of walkway, hard pavers. And it is really a multiple season garden. It comes out early with the primulas, and then it ends in just gold and red
and
foliage.
Apples.
We have some apple trees in there that the bears have pruned for us.
They know a good thing.
Yeah, they
know a good thing.
Sure do.
Yeah, I've got a question here. We've got lots of questions. So I'm going to welcome Brad onto Hometown Alaska. Hi, Brad.
Hi.
Well, go ahead and ask your question. We'll see if we can answer it.
Well, I'm looking for a non-toxic, biocompatible or, harmless way, a topical treatment for weeds that I can just spray on with a a little squirt gun like a spray bottle to just kill weeds.
Let me know when you find one.
I think it's called pulling them.
Yeah, I think.
Well, I do a lot of that too, but sometimes they get ahead of me. So I heard about horticultural vinegar, some concentrated form of acetic acid that just burns them, and then it goes away into vinegar, so it's harmless.
We're losing you just a little bit.
But it works. Horticultural vinegar does work, but it doesn't always kill the entire dandelion, for example. So you'll take off the top of the plant, maybe kill all of the root, but not necessarily. So that's the problem with all of these things. You know, they're weeds for a reason.
They're vigorous,
and they grow back where you don't want them.
So, right.
But I'm glad you didn't start out by saying, "Why can't I use Roundup?" Because you know, we're beyond that. I think in this town, I see that we're banning plastic bags. I hope the next thing we ban is going to be glyphosate and Roundup, because the Alaska Botanical Garden is an organic garden, and yours should be too. I think you're the only botanical garden in the United States of America that is organic.
Really?
There are probably some others out there that have practices similar to ours.
I don't think so. I've been to many of them, and I've been to many, many meetings, and people are astonished. And then I tell them that's true. At one time, we had an executive director. I don't know what Mike's policy is because he's new this year. We had an executive director who was made sure that the bug repellent that came in
was also
organic, which is very interesting.
But
it's very important that if you're going to kill weeds, you do it safely, and that horticultural vinegar works great. Adios.
What's the difference between horticultural vinegar and regular vinegar?
It's stronger.
Yeah. Oh, horticulture is stronger.
Yeah.
Because I just went and got like white vinegar.
Yeah, you can use that too.
Go ahead, Brad.
Where can you get it?
You know, I don't know if you can get it down at Mill and Feed.
I asked them, so I was calling you guys to ask if you knew where to get it.
And I would do what I always do when somebody asks me a question about gardening, is I look it up on Google.
Yeah, I think certain markets around town, specialty markets, may have the higher concentrated vinegar. I tried it at the garden, and I find that it does two things. One, it's volatile. I mean, it drifts. It'll end up on things that we don't want it to be on. So to be very careful with any sort of light, even a light breeze.
Oh yeah.
And then two, it is acidic, so it's going to change the pH of your soil.
Right.
Oh well, where I use it, I don't want anything to grow.
Well,
it's between the cracks of a patio.
Yeah, case by case decision.
Yeah.
Sure.
But if you're going to pour it on your green lawn, you're going to have a yellow spot there. Will it make it? Perhaps.
Yeah, until the pH changes.
Yeah. Adjusts.
Yeah, and you know, you can use steam. Unfortunately, we don't have very many steam application methods in this city, but you could even rent a steam cleaner and use steam. Works very good.
Or very hot water.
Hot water, flame. Right.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we do burn the weeds where it's appropriate.
Yep. Wow. Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Very interesting. Well, to give you a couple ideas, Brad?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, well, thanks for calling. Appreciate it. I'd like to welcome John onto Hometown Alaska. Hi, John.
Hi. I think my question is very much the same as dandelions. Dandelions are just everywhere in this town, and I live mid-hillside. I've tried burning them out, and what I've noticed, which is in a lawn, by the way, which is very interesting, is that if you burn one and it still has a flower on it, it will bloom in a day or so.
Yeah.
And so that doesn't work real well. But if you're saying vinegar, that sounds like a good one, because I pull a bunch of them, but hard to keep up with them.
It's real hard to keep up with them because we've lost the war in this town. seriously, when you think about it, and I'm starting to write about this in all my columns, and I'm starting to talk to other garden writers and getting them to do the same thing. We've lost the war. I mean, that's why you have to reuse the stuff all the time, even the chemical stuff. These are unbelievable plants. So what we need to do is we need to change the chemical composition of our soil. You need much richer, much more calcium. We need to start putting little thin layers of compost on our soil, which we've never done
before. Right on top of those dandelions?
Yeah. And the whole idea of continuing to mulch and run over your lawn and keep your grass taller, all of those things work. And keeping the flowers from being going to seed.
I spend my evenings going around picking off the yellow flowers. Yeah. I think my neighbors think I'm a little crazy, but I figure they can't make seeds then, right?
They can't. At least, but they're coming in from your neighbors.
They travel quite a ways by the breeze.
Yeah. I mean, someone will invent sooner or later a virus or something that'll kill them. They had one in Canada, but it turned out to also kill lettuce. So
not good.
So it's not being marketed.
Not good.
But
well, we are going to take a tiny break. I've got calls coming in. We've got Jim and Ty on the line. We're going to come back to you, but we're going to take a tiny break right now. You're listening to Hometown Alaska. I'm Kathleen McCoy.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 8 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. Today, as I said, we're having a little birthday party here in the studio. We're saying happy birthday to the Alaska Botanical Garden. It turns 25 this year, and we have Mike Monterusso, the executive director, in the studio with me today, and Jeff Lowenfels, longtime Anchorage Daily News garden columnist, speaker around the world, just you know, an authority. And we're getting a lot of calls from listeners about lots of things, because they recognize we've got some experts in the studio today. So we're going to continue to talk about the garden. I'm going to jump in and take another call from Jim right now. Welcome to Hometown Alaska, Jim.
Thank you. I've read Jeff's column for a long time, and I
found my reader. Did you?
Yeah. And it's not your mom.
Hang on. I want your name and number. Okay, yeah, okay.
He does a column?
Anyway, I try to hand off to friends and family what I've learned from reading your column. But one of the things that I like to do, I live a rural area, is I harvest moose nuggets in the spring and soak them in a bucket of water, let them ferment for a week or so, and then I put them on my plants that I know are developing blossoms, like roses and rhubarb, and it just makes them go crazy. It's an excellent fertilizer when you let out all the enzymes loose and all those natural bacteria back into the soil. Speeds up the process.
I'll have to get my swivel sticks and try it out.
Homemade fertilizer. Yeah. Wow. Thank you to the moose. Huh?
Well,
I guess they eat vegetable. They just eat vegetables, right?
Well, it's got a lot of cellulose in there.
Yeah.
It's highly concentrated because, you know, they're a ruminant, so it's very good. The other thing with roots growing through the driveway, I've tried heat and vinegar and all kinds of things to kill roots, and I finally just one day took my anger out on them roots with a big rubber hammer, and it shocks when you beat on that asphalt where that root's trying to push through it. It shocks that root, and it ruptures the structure of the root, and the root's not dead. It's gone.
It's violent.
You can take your frustrations out on them roots.
That's better than other ways, I would think. Yeah. Wow, I never thought of that. So you don't end up breaking up the asphalt?
Not with a rubber hammer. And if you do it on a warm day, the asphalt is flexible.
Huh.
And so you can feel it kind of give. That's why you use a rubber hammer. And the shockwave goes through the asphalt. It's going to go through that root, and it ruptures the living cells.
I'm amazed because I feel like they're so, you know, they can come back from anything. I do vinegar and then they come back after a while. Yeah. So that's an interesting one. We'll see. Yeah. Thanks for sharing that. That's really interesting.
Yes. I thought so when it worked.
Thank you, Jim. That's great. Appreciate it.
Okay.
All right. And I'd like to welcome Ty onto Hometown Alaska. Hi, Ty.
Hi, thanks for taking the call.
You bet.
I've got a general question. I sure appreciate the botanical garden, and my hat's off to you. But in a general sense, I really wonder about the wisdom of using these packs of wildflower seeds that you can buy everywhere that are, quote, Pacific Northwest and like that.
Mm, interesting.
Is that foreign and invasive? I've worked with weed warriors in the past, and boy, it's tough. So I wonder about those seed packs.
Yeah, I don't like them. I think they should be banned, frankly.
Because they're really Northwest, not necessarily Alaskan.
Yeah. You know, if we got Denali Seeds, which, you know, in theory is an Alaskan company, makes its own seeds, you know, Alaska Cool Seeds, I guess they call, you know, that's different. But you go buy these packs, who knows what's in it? We know that there are invasives in them, so you have to be very, very careful.
Wow, I never thought of that.
Hmm. Where can you get the, you say Denali Seeds? Or
what? Well, what you can do is there are some of these houses you can go buy individual types of seeds, and so only buy the seeds, and you can have your own mix made.
Hmm. So,
well, right. But if for an ignorant guy like me who wants to just toss them there and be responsible but have a nice mixture, is there any commercial stuff around locally?
Or if you were going to make your own, what would you put in it?
Well, I might put lupins. I might put some clover because I like that. You know, I mean, I might put a little cosmos, which is an annual. You know, I would certainly go to the nursery and talk to the nursery people about what they have in bulk. And then only get the stuff that you know is not invasive.
Hmm. That's a good idea,
actually.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. So I have a question, which is you don't really – I guess given all the people that come to the Alaska Botanical Garden to work there, how many are volunteers, most of them?
Well, we have – what, 5 or 6 staff members? It's now 8 for the summer. We bring on a couple of seasonals. But then we have dozens and dozens of volunteers. I don't remember the number of hours or equivalent. I think we have another full-time person basically throughout
the year. That manages the volunteers.
Yeah, well, no, I have some of that manages volunteers, sure. But it's essential for our day-to-day operations and our events to have volunteers. We would never be able to do what we do without volunteers.
Do they have to be horticulture specialists?
No, not at all.
Yeah, how do you get to be one? How do you get to be a volunteer?
So you just contact the office, come out. We have people that just come to the garden and look around like, oh, this is a pretty cool place. And how do you volunteer? Like, you know, do you have to have special certifications or skills? Like, no, it's, you know, we love to teach people what we know about gardening. That's part of our mission. So we are extremely grateful.
Would you kind of be folded in with a team that's working on a garden and that's how you would learn? Or would they just say, you don't know anything so you can pull weeds?
Oh, no, it depends on your interests. We find a lot of people that come out want the social aspect of gardening. And so we have days when we have groups of volunteers come in, or if they just want to be on their own, then we'll work with them to do their own individual project. And it doesn't have to be even gardening. We have people that greet at the front. We have people that support our events. We have people that work in the wintertime. We have people doing just kind of nuts and bolts stuff with our plant database, which we're going to put on our website this year. So that's exciting.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So it would just be a listing of everything that you have. And
with pictures and locations and information, right?
Huh. Wow. I found when I was Googling around trying to learn about the Botanical Garden that your papers are at the Consortium Library. Did you know that? And so it's all the sort of, I mean, if you really wanted to go back and learn how did it begin and what were the conversations like, you could read through all those meeting minutes and all that. That's cool that it's been saved. I think it's great.
And we did a lot of research for the 25th anniversary and saw some old pictures of Jeff and many others. And so that was a lot of fun. I'm still learning myself about all of that history. And so I'm really grateful for not only the work that Jeff and others did at the beginning, but just for their stories.
Really I didn't do that much. I must say I was sort of thrown off. The Alaska Horticultural...
You were thrown off?
Well, it was the Alaska Horticultural Association, which is interesting because most botanical gardens start when someone dies and gives their estate with a house and beautiful gardens and, you know, driveways already in place, all that kind of stuff. And so what we ended up with was the Alaska Horticultural Association. I sort of remember that Brock Schamberg, who was a local lawyer at the time, and a good friend of mine, Brock Schamberg was a big spearhead of getting a garden. And they thought maybe it should be a Kincaid Park. People looked around different places. But there was a rivalry going on at the time between the Daily News and the Anchorage Times.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah.
And the Daily News columnist had just started saying that the Anchorage Times columnist was making a serious mistake in telling people to use 8-32-16 fertilizer. And so that columnist said, I don't want to be on a board with the Anchorage Daily News columnist.
Boy, the feud goes deep.
Yeah, and so I said, gee, one less meeting to go to. That's okay by
so
me.
So you did get bounced.
No, so I got bounced. I voluntarily bounced myself. But it was very, very interesting to watch the process because there was quite a bit of debate whether we wanted to have it at where it is now or out at the Kincaid Park. And obviously there were different rationales for one versus the other. And eventually the city, I think, kind of helped quite a bit. And there was a spruce bark beetle problem going on, all sorts of stuff. But we ended up with the site we're at now. And one day I remember it was, I'm pretty sure it was the equinox. We just said, everybody get an iris from your garden. Come on out to this spot. And we walked up the first trail and we just plunked right where the Waddle Gate is right now. We put down all these irises. And that was the beginning.
And
of
said, this is this the is botanical
it.
Garden.
Yeah. Uh-huh. You know, probably 100 people came and everybody brought a couple of irises.
And the year was this was before 93, right?
Yeah.
Was it 93?
Well, it was probably right around there.
93.
Yeah, anyways, they're not there anymore. I don't know where those irises went, but I still see a lot of those people wandering around the garden.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And to see it now paved so people with wheelchairs can go in, I mean, it's just, you know, it's unbelievable the day and night. And, of course, Mike's going to take it, and he'll end up with a visitor center and, you know, things that we can't even imagine right now. But that's what's going
to
be happening.
One of my listeners asked me to ask this question. There used to be a garden fair, I think, at the Botanical Garden. And she told me it hasn't happened for 3 years, and she wanted to know why. Is it going to come back, or you just moved on? What's the story?
Well, you sort of moved on in a way, and so we found that it was took a lot of effort from staff, of which was very limited number of staff people out there, to not only organize events but to take care of the gardens. We all wear a whole variety of hats, and it was quite a draw to put on that level of an event. We have limited parking, so there's challenges at every turn.
I remember the shuttles. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
And so we find that smaller events are really a better fit for us. And maybe have elements of the garden fair that people enjoy. We may bring back parts of it in the future, but to bring it back as it was, there's no plan. Plus, we were competing more and more with all the stuff that goes on in Anchorage around town, and so it was hard to find. You know, Mayor's Marathon would come out there and
free.
Shut it down. So
right.
It just kind of made sense for it to evolve into something else.
Interesting. Just let our listeners know if you've just tuned in. This is Hometown Alaska, and we are talking about the Alaska Botanical Garden, which turns 25 this year. And you are welcome to call in with your questions. We have Mike Monteruso, who is the relatively new executive director. I guess you say a year?
Or 6 months.
6 months. Mm-hmm. But you've been at the garden for a while from Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some interesting similarities, cold climate, all that.
Yep.
And we also have Jeff Lohenfels, who's not short on opinions, as you can tell, which is great. So give us a call at 550-8433 in Anchorage, 1-888-353-5752 statewide, and send us an email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. And come to speak. Here is an email from Carol. Thank you for the introduction to this great community resource. I've visited Botanical Garden in other states that seem to have events and classes year-round. You mentioned that Alaska Botanical Garden has classes. What kind of classes do they offer? Are they family-friendly? And does it also host other events? And a second question with climate change. I've now found a tick in my yard. Do you have any recommendations for natural, non-toxic ways to keep these very unwelcome pests from in my yard and on my pests? So let's start with about the garden and you do have classes because I saw it on your website.
Program, sure, yeah. And that's something that I have tried to enhance and will continue to try to build on is educational programming. It's essential to our mission. We do programs in the schools. The schools come out to us for programming, but we do workshops for people of all ages. And that happens.
And skill levels.
Skill levels, right. And so there is quite a demand for basic gardening knowledge and instruction. And so we acknowledge that, and we have some programming planned specifically for that coming up. So there are several workshops on our website right now that are available to sign up for.
Yeah, and that's www.alaskabg.org.
So you spell out Alaska.
Alaska BG, standing for Botanical Garden.
.org.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay.
And so finally, on that note, for the first time this year, or first time ever at the garden, we'll be doing holiday lights during the winter.
Are we talking the solstice, the winter solstice, or what?
Right. Well, so Thanksgiving to New Year's time frame. So similar to what maybe the person was speaking of as far as other gardens doing events in the winter, we'll have try to bring people out and see the garden at a different time of year and have it all lit up.
And there's a facility out of the garden now that wasn't there when Mike left, and this facility is heated. It's a greenhouse facility, and it has a beautiful heat pump system in it that's very, very experimental and very cool. And classes can be held right there at the garden, and all the facilities there, and all the materials and tools. And so you got to go to that website and check it. My column, I always try to have what's going on in the garden enough time in advance so that you can go get the tickets and register. Some of these things are charged, some are free. And so you want to, you know, and it's cheaper always if you're a member. So you want to definitely check out that website every single week because there's always something there.
I'm sorry. I was just thinking about something you said, Jeff. Oh, what day does your column run?
Oh, Fridays.
Fridays. I thought it was Fridays, and it's always been Fridays.
Because they tried to change it once, and I think people had a fit.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Actually, we've got some callers, and I've got a caller from Talkeetna. I'd like to welcome Sandra onto Hometown Alaska. Hi, Sandra.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
Hey, I have the bane of our existence is orange hawkweed.
I knew she was
out there, and I'm wondering if you have any solutions or what are the best thing to try with it. And I actually have two different questions. The other one is if there's any, I've heard about seed banks where they store it for posterity, different seed stocks. I wondered if there was one in Alaska, and I'm happy to take my questions or my answers off air.
Okay, so first orange
orange hawkweed, which is a beautiful little flower, grows in this very dense green mats with a long stem with black hairs on it, and then at the tip of it, a beautiful orange flower.
I have that in my garden.
And it's an invasive beyond belief. It is on the list, I believe, so it's against the law even, you know, and it's very hard to get rid of. The seeds are like dandelions, only more prolific. And this is one that you could use the heat on, that you could burn, the steam. You just have to keep at it constantly.
What if you just pluck it out?
I don't think you get at all the roots, but it's certainly better than nothing. But the key thing is not to let it flower.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Life cycle is key on just about any pest. Right. Find the life cycle, and you can really minimize the effort that's required. Mm. So learn a little bit about what you're fighting.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And what about the seed bank? Go ahead.
The seed bank is, we don't have a seed bank, but we have a potato seed bank. In Alaska.
Up in the Matsu?
Plant Material
Experimental
Center.
Center.
And they maintain a bank of potatoes that exist only there. And so people come from all around the world to see whether Alaska has those potatoes. We have disease-free potatoes up here, which other places don't have. The farmers out in the valley can rely on this bank and change their varieties. Mm. And you, as a citizen of Alaska, can go out and get seed potato.
Is it important to change the kind of potatoes you grow in your garden? You don't know?
I don't particularly think it is, but you know, obviously, you know, you want to get different varieties and whatnot. At one time I heard that the Chinese were actually looking at that seed bank for potato seed for China.
Wow.
Of all places.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Now, what would cause a seed bank to be launched here? Would it be research that more like that, or could it be something the botanical garden could do but doesn't have the ability to do right now?
Yeah, we're interested in collecting seeds and educating people about the life cycle of plants, and certainly seeds are part of that. We don't have the capacity to have an actual seed bank. The state, I believe, works with the BLM on doing some seed collecting and some seed banking, and that's really a national effort. So I do believe that many of our species are being banked. I don't think they're accessible to the general public, but there is. Mm-hmm. We are part of. I'm fairly certain we're part of that national.
Yeah, grass
effort.
Seeds. I think, in particular, out in the Aleutian Islands, are picking up grass seeds that only exist there.
Interesting. I'm going to take one more caller, and then we're going to take a tiny break here. But I'd like to welcome Faye onto Hometown Alaska. Hi, Faye. Oh, I'm sorry, Faye. Call back. We'll get you the next time. We're going to take a little break. You're listening to Hometown Alaska, and I'm Kathleen McCoy.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media, You can find Hometown Alaska on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. And apparently people are listening because we're getting lots of calls and interesting questions. We are talking with the Alaska Botanical Garden folks. The garden is celebrating its 25th birthday, and we have Executive Director Mike Monterusso and columnist Jeff Lohenfels. Jeff has been writing about gardening maybe before there was an Alaska Botanical Garden, and all the way through the Alaska Botanical Garden. And I'm just going to go ahead and take just a couple of gardening questions that's come in over email. Love the Botanical Garden and love Jeff Lohenfels' column. Any recommendations to get rid of creeping bellflower? I live in Airport Heights, and it seems like it's taking over the neighborhood. And the second question is, I have Tatarian honeysuckle, I believe, in my yard, and leaf rollers destroy it every summer. Any special methods to rid my yard of these pests as well as white flies? Well, that's three questions, really. So, yeah. What about the creeping bellflower? Is that a bad thing? Oh, it's bad.
Yeah, it's terrible. We have it on our property.
Is it those little blue?
Yeah, the blue propunculus.
Campanula.
Yeah, campanula. And it just gets, once established, impossible to get rid of. It's another one of those ones. You want to burn it. Mm. You want to mulch heavily. You want to prevent it from flowering, but it'll spread by roots.
Roots.
It's just you can't get rid of it, but you can cover it up.
Oh.
Yeah.
What do you mean? Like put cardboard
mulch
on top?
Mulch.
Oh, mulch.
Mulch,
just mulch.
Mulch.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Okay. In line with that, Equisetum.
Equisetum you cannot get rid of. Equisetum is a prehistoric throwback, but
the horsetails,
right. Mm-hmm. But it spreads by spores and also by the roots. But if you cut it at the surface level, it doesn't grow back that year.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
so, you know.
Okay, get your scissors out.
In the right
out.
Areas, it's gorgeous. In a woodsy scene,
right.
Oh my god,
it's
you
know, soft.
People comment it all the time because we have quite a lot of it in the beds in the natural areas. And so yeah, just as Jeff said, we have a little party. Get a good volunteer group to come out and just pick it once
snip,
a year,
snip,
and
snip.
That's it for the year.
Yeah. Oh, that's good to know.
Sure.
Okay.
And while you're out there, you ought to be getting those little yellow butter and eggs at the same time.
Okay.
You know, for the
okay.
flower.
But yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And what was the third question?
Tatarian honeysuckle and leaf rollers that seem to destroy it. And so any ideas there and any methods to get rid of white flies as well?
Yeah. White flies outside, huh? Well, the leaf rollers probably are caterpillars, not sawflies. And if they're leaf rollers are generally caterpillars, and you can use a BT product, a Bacillus thuringiensis. You spray this bacterial product on it. They eat it. They eat the leaves. They get the bacteria in their stomach, and it kills them.
So you spray it on the leaves, not necessarily on the bug.
Right.
Okay.
On the leaves.
And that is organic?
That's organic, and you can get that at any place where they
just
sell it.
Just BT.
BT. Or a product that contains BT. They have different names for
okay.
them. Okay. And then white flies. Oh, my gosh. Again, it's a life cycle situation so that you got to make sure that you get them. They lay eggs, you know, every 7 days or something. You have to look it up. And then you can use horticultural oils. You can use...
What's a horticulture oil?
It's an oil that smothers the...
Okay.
So they can't breathe.
You spray?
Spray it on the bug itself. You can use... gosh, what do I want to say?
Soap and oil are kind of the
same
soap,
thing. Yeah, soap. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. But there's also Azomax-y kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, neem-based products will help get them. They're very hard to get rid of.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you just have to get rid of the plants that are causing the problem.
What causes them?
Well, we get them on lantanas, of all things, which you know, you go indoors mostly, but they sell them outdoors here now. They generally are not a problem except for an indoor greenhouse.
Mm-hmm.
And I would basically ignore them. Really?
Okay. Okay. I have Hascap berries, and I have the two different types. The flies seem to love them. They're eating the leaves, but
see, I don't think the flies are eating the leaves. The flies are laying eggs. It's the larva that the eggs.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But I don't mind them, except when I'm sitting out in my yard, they're all over me,
right.
And that's annoying.
That is annoying.
So I don't want to get one of those
electric things that I don't want to do that. So
how about a vacuum cleaner?
Okay.
Or a fan that blows them away.
Yeah. Whenever there's a little breeze in the backyard, I don't have it.
A shop vac.
Yeah. Don't come near me.
Yeah, suck them up. Okay.
Let me see. Here's another question. Oh, the butter and eggs flour is included in the Alaska State Fair and is awarded. Why is it? Why? If it isn't invasive?
People do stupid things.
Okay. There's no explaining human nature. Okay. Here is a question. I noticed the ABT, I think they mean the ABG, native shrubs called Fool's Huckleberry at the entrance. I have them in my yard and I love them. Unfortunately, last summer, mine developed a kind of blight, large black spots on the leaves. They are now dead. Does the ABG guest, which is you, Mike, know what may have happened to them and will they eventually come back?
I would say they probably will come back. Sounds like some sort of a virus or something that's probably cyclical, and just see what happens.
If you can wait it out,
and see. But if it's if it's systemic, it's a native plant. I know they're hard to find. We have had them in the past for sale. We haven't had them recently. But it's a native plant, so it should have a balance with the pests.
It should be able to survive if maybe you give it a chance.
If you get too many of them in one spot, it's kind of a monoculture, then you can have a problem with the whole area being wiped out.
You need diversity. Yeah.
But interesting, you mentioned the botanical garden does have a nursery, and it's quite an interesting nursery because a lot of the stuff you can't find other places.
Right.
So it's a very interesting nursery for perennials. Ooh, really nice.
I mean, and nursery being, people can come and buy them.
Right. Every day we're open with plant sales.
Oh, I thought it was just certain times of the year. But
and a discount for members.
Okay.
And when you have a sale, I guess the members get in an hour ahead of time.
Early for that. Yeah, beginning, our kickoff of the season is May 20th or 19th or whatever. And so that's the start of the plant sales, but it's all season long.
It must be very hot at certain times. I mean, like maybe in the fall, or is it just hot all the time, the daily sale?
The numbers of people, right? It was spring and people are really anxious to buy plants or just look at plants.
Yeah.
It's great to have people come out to see the gardens and to look at the plants
So
many fun things happen out there. I mean, my favorite day, I think it's going to be the 18th this year of August, the pot recycling day.
I love the pot.
You get rid of all of those things you got laying around.
Yeah.
We always try to enter the Guinness Book of Records, Alpart, and they won't accept it as a category yet. But I think
you'll get it eventually.
More and more cities are beginning to do this, and we really were, I think, the first ones to do it. And
it's great. That's great.
Tons of those things.
Let me see what Luann has to ask. Welcome to Hometown Alaska, Luann.
Oh, hello. Thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
I absolutely love Jeff Lowenfield's newspaper articles and books and try really hard.
I always say, don't tell me, tell the Anchorage Daily News.
And we no one paid Luann to say that. Go ahead, Luann.
No, not at all. Anyway, I have a question, and I hope you can help me with some how to get rid of some invasives. I do love the garden. I'm not a true gardener. I don't grow by seed, but I do love my garden, and my husband says I'm the envy of the neighborhood. Who knows? I don't know. But anyway, in the very back of my yard, and we're very close to Kincaid, is a beautiful area that when we moved into our house had these long, flowing, beautiful, tall grasses that blew in the wind. And over the course of the 20 years, it has become less beautiful grasses and more of this. It used to have the yellow flower, and I've somehow pulled that and got it out of there. Now it has this purple flower that kind of crawls all over everything.
Yeah, vetch.
Vetch.
That's what I think it is. Yeah. And I went in there the other day, and I pulled it out by hand, half of it, worked myself to the bone, and I threw grass seed down, and I'm just trying to grow the grass back. Can you give me any suggestions to get rid of it? There's still a lot there I need to get rid of.
Have you tried a thatching rake? Sometimes you can rake it out.
So, this is a really thick,
Try a thatching rake. You know the ones that are metal ones?
You'll get an upper body workout, too.
Yeah, you will. Don't buy one.
Yeah. I was in that garden two, 3 hours just pulling by hand.
Well,
they do come up, seem to be pretty easy.
Yeah, but they're all over that area. They're all over on the bluff. They're all over the place. Mm. And they were introduced by the government because they were a good cattle feed or something of that sort. And so they've spread like crazy. They're very hard to get rid of. But you're doing the right thing. You got to get them now. They're starting to flower. Once they flower, they go to seed. They're a vetch. Uh-huh. The nice thing about them is I think vetches are nitrogen fixers, so at least they're enriching the soil a little bit. But you got to just stay at them, and you're doing the right thing. You could, in theory, smother the entire area by covering the entire area with plastic. But then you'd kill the grasses and everything else as well. So I don't know if you want to do that.
Yeah. There's another little plant in there that's prettier. It kind of looks almost like I'm not really sure, just it's tall and has pretty green leaves and little pink flowers. And I've been pulling that up too because I really don't know what it is. But it's getting overtaken by the vetch.
Yeah, the vetch.
And I thought I'd just pull everything up but the grass and try to get those grasses to grow back.
Yeah, it's a good idea. The vetch is like miniature kudzu. That's the only thing
I was trying to think of the name of that, kudzu.
You leave your foot there too long, it'll cover your whole foot. No question about it.
Right.
Just keep at it.
If I just plant regular old grass, because I had old grass seed that I don't know how old it was. I just threw it in there. I hope it works. It's still
going to get overcome by the vetch. So again, when Mike was talking about, you got to know the life cycle of this stuff. You know, at some point in time, that vetch dies back. You want to get that grass growing up right then and there.
When it dies.
Yeah, okay. But it's going to take 21 days for that grass to germinate. So by then, that vetch will be,
it'll be back.
Keep working it. Yeah.
Yes. You have a lifelong job. All right. Thank you, Luann. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Bye bye. Here's another. I think this is going to be when you'll welcome, because I think I read that you don't like rototilling. So I've heard a lot recently about not rototilling gardens because of the mycorrhizal fungi. If I didn't rototill my valley garden, I would be harvesting nothing but fireweed, horsetail fern, and cottonwood trees. What do I do?
Well, it actually may be the rototilling that's causing all those things to germinate, because when you rototill, you expose the seeds to light. And very often those seeds wouldn't be exposed to light if you didn't turn the soil over. The deal on rototilling is you do it once in order to be able to plant in a garden. After that, you do the least amount of disturbance possible to the soil. So if you want to plant a row of corn, we're not growing corn here, but you just take a 2x4 and you pull it down the row. And you make a little groove and you put the corn seed in there. There's no reason you have to rototill the entire thing. It not only destroys the mycorrhizal fungal network, when you cut a worm in half, you don't get two worms. When you put the bacteria that's supposed to be down in one area and you fluff it up and bring it up, you do all sorts of terrible things.
You upset the balance.
And you lose soil. That's the worst thing. So in the lower 48 states, the United States government is now trying to encourage people to do no-till farming, because we're losing a half an inch of soil every year. It blows away because we make it too fluffy. So now let's go to your fireweed and everything else. That's because you've got bare soil. Nature doesn't have bare soil. Cover it up. Mulch everything but the things that you're growing in your garden, and they won't grow up and they won't be a problem.
Okay. Yeah. Good idea. And here's one more question.
And it's a lot less work. Rototilling's work.
Yeah. I used to like how knew the garden looked.
We all did. Believe me, and I'll tell you what, it's something that's been going on since, the 1700s. Mm. And the only reason we do it here is because what it does is it changes your soil from soil that can grow spruce trees and old growth kinds of stuff, which likes fungal, to soils that will grow annuals. And so George Washington and John Adams, they all wanted to grow annuals, and they were taking old growth forests and turning them into vegetable gardens. And so they took this idea that came from England, it worked, and they kept doing it every year because nobody told them they didn't have to. Mm-hmm. I'm telling you, you don't have to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, good. Save yourself one garden job then. Ooh. Right. Here's one more question. How safe are the iron HEDTA weed killers? Don't know?
Oh, iron. Yeah, iron, it's safe, but you got to be careful what you get it on. If you get it on slate, for example, the wrong, on wood, it'll change
colors.
Yeah, now, safe is a relative thing. You don't want to drink it. Mm-hmm. You probably don't want to pour it on your skin. Mm-hmm. You want to follow the directions, basically. But yeah, they're not like Roundup. You're not going to find that stuff in your bloodstream. Mm-hmm. And everybody who's listening right now to this radio has Roundup in their bloodstream.
Just because we've had it in our culture.
I don't know anybody who's ever asked to eat it, and yet there it is.
Mm-hmm. It's persistent. Yeah. I want to ask a question about my, I have a north-facing front yard, trees, very compacted soil. I don't really care if I have a lawn. I'd like the clover to take over.
Yeah.
But should I be worrying about the compactness of that soil? Should I do anything? And what can you do without having to dig?
Well, you can aerate. The only thing you can really do is aerate. Well, you could walk around with golf, you know, or track shoes on. Mm-hmm. Or you can aerate. And aeration is something people in the lower 48 states do on a regular basis. We don't do it very much here, but you just run the machine over. It pulls up these plugs. It looks like you had, you know, a flock of geese on your lawn, and they pooped everywhere. And then you just let that stuff go back into the holes. Uh-huh. And, you could throw some clover down at the same time and go into those holes and be really
great. I'm hoping the clover wins.
Yeah, me too.
It's mulched with good compost and like Jeff said, cover the soil so it doesn't blow away. Mm-hmm. And I would say aeration is great. Yeah. But over time, if you're mulching with good compost and adding microbes and all that the soil structure will take care of itself.
Right. The soil food web, the worms and all those bugs that are chasing each other and eating, you know, rogue
beetles. Busy. I want to give you a chance. Before the show, Jeff and I talked a little bit about invasive species and how it is actually changing even the wildlife that we live with. So could you just address that a little bit? We have a couple minutes, not a lot.
Yeah, I think for people who want to follow through on it, there's a book called Bringing Nature Home by Doug Ptolemy. Doug actually, I think, has a son who lives in Anchorage and works for the Forest Service. I could be wrong. But anyway, he comes up here occasionally. And I've spoken with him on various occasions around the country at various lectures series. And what he's a university professor in Delaware, and what he's discovered is that if you plant a tree, say in Maryland or Delaware, that doesn't belong there, that you end up getting maybe one or two kinds of insects living in that tree. The tree that you were replacing that used to be there would have maybe 200-300 different kinds of insects. So that means you end up with different birds, fewer of them. You end up with a complete change in your ecosystem, not a better one. Mm-hmm. And so that's what we're doing here in Alaska. When we bring in those mountain ashes, they replace the trees that would normally be growing, or the chokecherries, along the riparian rights of way, around the water. And so now we don't have the same kind of salmon habitat anymore. And all of a sudden, we don't have salmon. And if people think it doesn't happen, it does. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've watched those things take over here in Anchorage. Mm-hmm. And we've watched the dandelion take over here in Anchorage. We're watching the hawkweed take over in Talkeetna. And these are serious, serious problems, which we're making worse by bringing in a lot of stuff.
So are we talking, I mean, like we talked about the sugar maples up there.
Let's talk about something that's as lovely, and I love them, and I write about them all the time, Ligwalleria.
Uh-huh.
A couple of years ago, I was walking in the woods by my property, and there were some Ligwallerias. Well, where did I think they came from? My garden,
uh-oh,
for sure, you know.
Uh-oh.
Now, that's not a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
And
because it's going to change that.
It's going to change.
Part
exactly.
Of the woods.
Exactly, uh-huh. Exactly. So that's why we have to be very careful. And that's why a botanical garden is so important, because we can plant anything there, and we have the staff
control
and
it.
The ability to watch it and control it.
Right.
We monitor everything. We review all the plants coming in to the garden so that we know they're not invasive.
You know who's living in your garden, right? All right. Well, you hear the music, you know. We're running out of time. I'd like to thank Mike Monteruso, Executive Director of the Alaska Botanical Garden, and Jeff Lowenfels, and of course our listeners and callers. I'll be back as your host next Monday with Justice Alaska on Hometown Alaska. Find us on the web at alaskapublic.org. Dave Waldron is our audio engineer. I'm Kathleen McCoy. Thanks for joining us today on Hometown Alaska.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.